Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Welcome to Main Menu Live. Tonight, we bring to you tonight a number of panelists, as well as my co-host, Daryl Shandro. And we brought to you earlier here on Main Menu a presentation from Dean Martineau and Stephen Baum. Stephen Baum from Kurzweil Educational Systems. And we want to sincerely thank both of them. Dean Martineau produces the Sound Computing Magazine. Yeah. Dean Martineau produces the Sound Computing Magazine. And you can find out more about that by contacting Dean. Hello, Daryl, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Well, good evening there, everyone. And we are breaking up a little bit, but perhaps that will improve over time. But good evening, and it's great to be on. We have
a number of people with us,
and we have. We have Jamie Pauls from Access Watch.
That's right. It's great to be here tonight.
Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you.
And we have Paul Hendrickson from Kurzweil Educational Systems. Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Hey, great.
Oh, good.
Hey, guys. Thanks for asking.
That's great. We'll bring your volume up a little bit here. And if you can get closer to your phone there, that would be great. There's a number of ways that we can be contacted tonight, as Stephen Bauer told you at the beginning of the show here. We can be contacted on the 800 number, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, and we can also be contacted via MSN. Daryl?
MSN is the address. It's mainmenu@acbradio.org, and we are already signed into that address. So if you have any comments or questions, go ahead and add mainmenu@acbradio.org to your contact list.
That's right. Before we get into talking things Kurzweil as well as Access Watch, since we have Jamie here, we wanted to talk a little bit about some things from last week's Vista show. We want to sincerely thank all of you who participated in that show. We really had a great time putting that together for you. Freedom Scientific released their podcast last week called FSCast, and in that podcast they talked all about JAWS for Windows version 8.0 and the new features that are going to be expected in that version, along with Vista support. The thing that is going to be required for that is that you are a current JAWS 8.0 customer and that you're enrolled in the SMA program as well. And so that's kind of important to keep in mind, that if you're at a zero count with your JAWS 8, then you're going to need to get an SMA if you are wanting to move to Windows Vista. Eric Damery informed me, as well as reading today on AFB's website, that they will be having a release of JAWS for Windows version 8 for Vista by the middle of February. So keep an eye on freedomscientific.com for more details. Do you have any other comments on the Vista front there, Daryl?
Okay. Well, not at this time. I'm looking forward to chatting with Paul a bit about his Vista.
Yes. Paul got machine. A Vista machine, and we'll talk to him about that. And before we go any further, we actually have a caller already. Let's bring the caller on here. And hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live. How can we help you tonight?
Hey, Jeff and everybody else. This is Marlena.
Hello, Miss Lieberg.
So far. Yeah, I'm sick.
Oh.
So I don't feel like me. But I had a question for Paul.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if I'm going to be here for the whole show.
Okay.
So
well, go right ahead.
Jumping in early. Paul, in version 11, which I have just ordered today, happily, is there any improvement in scanning, what do you call it, superscript, subscript, like fractions and recipes and that sort of thing?
Not to the best of my knowledge. We do have ScanSoft 15 and FineEngine 8. So if those guys improve anything, but I have not heard anything specifically. We always do a pretty bad job at scanning map, as you guys know.
Yeah.
And so I have not seen anything on the list or anybody else talking about scanning fractions or scanning cookbooks, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's too bad. But nonetheless, it's a wonderful product, and I actually won my first copy in 1999 at the ACB convention in LA. I was formerly an open book user. I won that and haven't looked back since. I love the product.
You're probably familiar with the scanning optimization wizard. This is a scan
right.
and recognize feature, and
right.
if you have your images turned on, what it will do is it only has two things in it, text quality and scanning engine, and it will use those two items, optimize for those particularly two items without having to set all of the other brightness, all the other features, to try to help you figure what would be the best recognition engine to use for that particular document.
Great. Okay, thank you so much. Great show, you guys. And
hope you feel better, Marlena.
As long as I can. Okay, thanks.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Let's see, in reference to tech news. Now, Jamie, you had done an Access Watch review for us here on Main Menu Live all about Windows Live OneCare.
That's right.
And
yes.
There was some news that came out today that we thought we'd share with people, that it looks like Windows OneCare Live is having some difficulty in scanning for viruses. And we don't have a lot of details on this yet, but it looks like it failed 37 virus tests of common viruses. So this is something that we'll keep an eye on. Especially since this is something that I personally have recommended that users use and get involved with. So this is definitely something that we'll try to make sure we keep an eye on. It's kind of disturbing.
This is, Paul here. I also talked to a guy who said it didn't work well under Windows Vista.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I heard that, too.
It's not part of Windows Vista. Windows Defender is part of Windows Vista, but he installed Live OneCare. And it didn't do very well on his system.
Yes, I heard that too, Paul. And
wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll keep an eye on this. I'm afraid there's going to be a number of applications which do not work well on Windows Vista. And in fact, you know, I think all of the AT vendors have kind of stated, you know, this is why they're doing public betas. And even Freedom Scientific stated on their podcast that, you know, that we're treading into new territory. There's going to be things because of the lack of people having access to Vista that, you know, they're not going to catch everything. So everyone, if you're going to be brave like Paul tonight, who's here joining us and move to Vista right away, then just be prepared for, you know, little bumps in the road and, you know, just be patient with your AT vendors and they'll work out those details. It's No screen reader is going to be perfect out of the box. That's for darn sure. So, all right. And I wanted to mention one other thing concerning an experience that I had, and then we'll go ahead and get to the topic tonight. And that is that for those of you that have a Linksys WRT54G, it's not necessarily accessibility related, but it is very annoying. And it's a version 5 or version 6 router. Then you're more than likely, this is something that we're seeing, or at least I have seen hundreds of posts on the Linksys forums about this. There's an issue with Windows Live Messenger connecting and disconnecting at random, and actually quite frequently, to be perfectly honest. And the only fix seems to be to upgrade to the DDWRT third-party firmware, which is available for the WRT54G. And you want to comment a little bit about that firmware, Daryl?
Yes. I have a Linksys WRT54GL, which is the like a higher capacity Linux-based version of the product. So I've been running it on there for quite some time, although I've not been using the router on a regular basis. But anyhow, there are a number of different versions of the firmware. So there's Micro, Mini, Standard, VPN, and VoIP. And if you have a G, you know, not a GS or a GL or any of those, like Jeff does, then you've got to use the micro version. And the website is dd-wrt.com, and you go over to the downloads link, and you want to look for V23SP2, and unfortunately the website is not very not a very clean organization. I don't think it really has a lot to do with accessibility. It has to do with sort of the ad hoc nature of the of this open source project. But you wouldn't know it once you get the firmware installed, which I would you want to make sure you know what you're doing if you're going to do this, or make sure you have access to someone who does. Because it's possible to do what we call brick your router.
And I had access to Daryl in case I told him if you heard screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth south of Phoenix, then it was me. But luckily, it went pretty well. It took about 10-15 minutes, and most of that was being nervous and being afraid to push the actual button to make the upgrades happen. So, yeah, kind of interesting. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started with our topic tonight. And we're going to first talk to Paul Hendrickson all about Kurzweil 1000. And one of the first questions, Daryl, did you have any questions from the MSN list already, Daryl?
We don't have anything on the MSN yet, and I do apologize if I'm a little bit slow on the switch tonight, but the Skype connection over here is breaking up quite
Because you're sounding
quite badly.
Fine. You're sounding fine here, Daryl.
I actually have a question for Paul, if I could break in.
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
There you go.
One of the things that I've been, and actually I'm a new user, so I'm kind of approaching this from the new user angle. I'm loving the product, by the way. As a matter of fact, it was the presentation that Dean Martineau did that really got me interested in going ahead and switching over to K1000. The Braille support, and I'm talking about Braille output, is so excellent that I'm curious if a lot of people are actually using K1000 as a Braille translation program, sending things to a note taker or an embosser, as opposed to using a program, you know, a regular Braille translation program. I realize if you're a transcriber, you probably need a lot more control. But are you actually seeing that, Paul?
Well, you know, I've used it myself. We kind of refer to it here around Kurzweil as quick and dirty Braille.
There you go.
Not Library of Congress format, but, you know, it certainly is nice. You might get a line where you've got maybe one or two words, and you know for sure that you could really get two or three more contracted words on that line. But it is quite nice to be able to have that, and all one needs to do to get that for your listeners is to go into Windows and install a generic text printer. Once you install that generic text printer, when you get ready to print in Braille, you do your Control-P and select the generic text printer as your printer of choice, and then you can go ahead and print your documents out to your embosser.
Excellent. Very good.
Yeah, that is really neat, actually. And there's really a lot of really great things in the product. And one of the questions that I had Paul, and I don't want to necessarily be doing a lot of repeating of things that were covered in the first hour, because I think most of the people who are listening probably caught that first hour. And if not, and you guys have a question, definitely call in and ask your question. 866-400-5333. 866-400-5333. I had a question about scanners, Paul, and this seems to be, I know the stock answer from Kurzweil is, you know, check our website for the list of supported scanners. And honestly, I did that. And, but then when I went to Best Buy, or Office Depot, or Office Max, or any of these type of stores, I couldn't find many of those scanners available on the shelf. And this is really not because of you guys not keeping up with the list of scanners. Gosh, they probably come out every day. it's more of just, you know, stores just, you know, moving in and out of the hardware, and so it makes it really kind of difficult. And so I thought maybe, you know, if you, Paul, were out, you know, going out shopping, let's say your scanner blew up, what kind of things would you be looking for to make sure that you got a good scanner that would work with K1000?
Well, one of the problems that I am starting to see personally when I go to these stores that you mentioned is everybody is converting over to one of the things that we ask people not to use if at all possible, and that's the all-in-one scanner, printer, fax, coffee maker. And we try to get people not to, well, a lot of times those are kind of slow scanners. So, and I always tell people, look, if you're going to pay $100, if you're going to get a scanner and a printer and a copier all in one, you know, what kind of parts do you think you're going to get? But I am seeing, as I go to these stores, rows of all-in-one scanners, and everybody seems to be converting to that, and it's harder to find a flatbed scanner. We still recommend that people stick with Epson, although some of the higher-priced HP scanners, like the 8250 and the 5590, some of those scanners now have drivers that will support brightness control, where the older HPs did not for a while. So we're starting to see HP change their drivers to give us that ability. And we have a program in Kurzweil called ScanConf, which continues to evolve with each version of Kurzweil, to where we can go in and we can play with a few things. If you have an all-in-one scanner, probably the two things you first want to do is go into ScanConf, make sure you're on the Twain driver in that little combo box there, and you want to set hold scan to never, which tells Kurzweil not to hold on to the Twain driver between pages, and you want to set native mode to on, which tells Kurzweil not to pass the document or the OCR of the document to the OCR engine until it is complete. And a lot of times doing those two things will allow us to work with these all-in-one scanners. But they are really sometimes difficult to get functioning with Kurzweil.
Sure, yeah. Okay. We had a number of questions come in from listeners this week. Actually, we had three of them come in. And so I thought I'd go ahead and read them to you. And the first one is from Stacy, and she wanted to know, are there good reasons to get K1000 if I do not have a scanner hooked up to the computer or if I don't plan on getting a scanner?
I actually know a lady who has had a scanner for a few years, and she got interested in Bookshare. So if you're here in the United States and you can have access to Bookshare, you can download hundreds of thousands of titles. This lady probably hasn't scanned anything in 2 years. She recently started scanning again, though, because she got version 11, and she was so impressed with how accurate the new engines were in version 11. But, yeah, you can get stuff off the Internet. You can get stuff off of Gutenberg or Bookshare or some of these various sites that you can go to, and you can read it that way. And you can bring it into Kurzweil and do whatever you want to do with it, edit it or read it or do whatever you want to do with it.
You could also use it to open PDFs and other files that would not normally.
That's true. You can do that as well.
Be accessible easily.
And if you have these files, you can burn them to MP3s and put them in your MP3 player, like a book port or a book courier, that sort of thing.
Right. Now, one question came up on the Kurzweil 1000 list this last week, having to do with, and I think it was you, Jamie, having to do with secure PDFs. Is that right?
Absolutely. I purchased a book on the Internet, and it was an e-book, and I knew I was taking a risk when I did so, but I went ahead and purchased it and was unable to open it in Adobe. Well, I mean, I opened it in Adobe, but there was no text that was apparent. So I went into K1000 and opened the document, and oddly enough, when K1000 attempted to scan the image and then it was going to do the OCR recognition, my Dell printer began to print.
Yeah.
And even when I turned the silly thing off, it turned back on and printed. I didn't disconnect the USB cable. What I ended up doing was to, and thanks to Stephen Baum, who actually made the suggestion, was to go into Adobe and then choose the Kezi virtual printer, and lo and behold, Kurzweil loaded, and it recognized the file just like a charm.
Now, Paul, when we're dealing with secure PDFs like this, a lot of times they require authentication or something from the actual provider of that book. And is that handled transparently from the printer driver itself?
You know, for the longest time, when I used to talk to Stephen Baum about this, and we've been kind of pushing this item around for a couple of years that we wanted to be able to do e-books, we found that a lot of them were not accessible. So I was kind of pleased that Jamie was able to pull this off.
Yeah, me too.
Because we found that a lot of them would not allow us to print them. When you usually buy a purchased e-book, they pretty much want you to sit there in Acrobat and read it screen by screen. They don't want you to print it. They don't want you to save it as a text file.
Yeah, these secure PDFs.
When I saw him do that, I thought that was great.
Yeah. So I dodged a bullet there, didn't I?
Yeah. You're kind of lucky because a lot of these e-books are not accessible due to the fact that they have not, checked the appropriate check boxes when they're making the PDF to make sure that the text is available, which is more than likely why you weren't able to read it in Adobe
exactly.
Acrobat Reader. So,
I actually got a manual for a stereo receiver, and I brought it up in Kurzweil, and it decided I needed a password.
Thank goodness
the virtual printer kicked in after about three presses of OK, and I was able to get something.
Oof, yeah.
I'd also like to say that sometimes there are some secured PDFs that Jamal's PDF to TXT will open. So that's an option as well.
Yeah, that thing is a godsend. I had a, Daryl has been telling me all along, you need to try this thing. It's really, really, really good. And I'm like, well, I only really deal with PDFs when new releases of our software come out. And it is a real pain because I have to open them all and convert them to text and everything. And so we're beginning to work on a new version of the software. And it came with, 64 PDF files and... I'm like, I'm not going to open each one of these and save them out. And so I downloaded PDF to TXT and had them done in really less than a minute. It was unbelievable. So, yeah, if you have not tried PDF to TXT, then you need to get that from the Empowerment Zone. You don't know the URL off the top of your head there, do you, Daryl?
I do.
Of course you do.
Because this utility is has been a job saver, but practically, for me. It's www.empowermentzone.com/P2T setup. That's P, the number 2, the letter T, setup.exe. And that's a strong recommendation from me for sure.
That's great. Okay. All right, let's see. Richard wanted to know about running K1000 on the Mac.
I talked to Stephen one day, oddly enough, a few months ago, and I asked him about that because I had been made aware that Macintosh now uses an Intel processor, and he said they tested Kurzweil 3000 on it, and it worked fine, so he sees absolutely no reason why Kurzweil 1000 should not be able to work on an Intel-based Mac.
Okay, well, that was short and sweet.
And I thought that was great.
Yeah. Another question we actually just got in is... What is the difference between K1000 and K3000?
Kurzweil 1000 is for blind or visually impaired individuals. It's all voice driven. All the menus talk. Although you can use it with a mouse, all of the menus talk. Everything has shortcut keys. Kurzweil 3000, although it talks and although some of the menus talk, it is much more mouse intensive. There are parts of Kurzweil 3000, which by the way is for sighted individuals with learning disabilities, and there are parts of that particular program that can only be accessed with a mouse, such as the tools menu and being able to put sticky notes on different parts of the text and being able to put bubbles there that a student can click on and the bubble will open and they will be able to be asked a question, perhaps maybe in a testing situation. So that is a much more mouse-intensive program, very difficult for a blind person to use.
Okay, and our last question for tonight, in reference to things that came in, has to do with the newest voices, and this is sort of covered in the last hour, but let's go ahead and review it again, what the new voices in K1000 version 11 that are shipped.
The new voices are using Eloquence voices, I believe it's 6.1, correct me if I'm wrong on that particular version. We switched over to that from Via Voice Out Loud because we were always trying to kind of wrestle with JAWS and Window Eyes that were using Eloquence, and we were using Via Voice. It was pretty much the same code base, but it was kind of unstable on the system, or could be unstable on some people's systems. So we have switched over to the Eloquence voices, and the only problem that we're seeing with that is for people who are using Window Eyes. If you are a Window Eyes user, you need to install Window Eyes and do not install the Eloquence voices. And then go ahead and install Kurzweil. If you have Eloquence installed and you do install Kurzweil, what will happen is Kurzweil will not install the Eloquent technology voices. Then you need to go back, put in your Windowize disk, and remove those voices, and then do a repair or a reinstall of Kurzweil, and you'll get those voices back, and then both programs can use them.
Mm. Okay.
Now there is, and there's also the NeoSpeech disk, which is Kate and Paul, but there is no new version of that with 11. The newest version of that came out with version 10.
So if you already have version 10, then what should the upgrade, you know, path be? Should, because the cassette tape tells you to remove and reinstall the actual speech, you know, CD.
What happened with version 10? I know the tape says that, and I don't really know why it says that, because I don't believe there was not a new version of Kate and Paul with version 11. So I'm not entirely sure why it tells you to uninstall that, the voiceware.
Okay.
I'd have to ask Stephen about that myself. I just installed it on my Vista system last night. So.
Yeah, we'll get to your Vista system here in a few minutes. Okay. Jamie or Daryl, do you have any more questions concerning Kurzweil?
Yeah, I am kind of curious. When you talk about burning audio files to CD and being able to put bookmarks in files, my mind starts to race, and I'm wondering if there will ever be the possibility to create a CDA file, an actual audio CD file. And if you could put bookmarks in that thing, then you could actually put CD tracks. And I realize, you know, we new users sometimes try to make a product be all things to us and make it go directions that maybe the developers don't intend. But I'm curious if that's, you know, even being contemplated at this time.
Well, no, it isn't. But that's the kind of thing that we want to hear about.
I mean, that just fascinates me to think that, you know, you could bookmark sections of a file, and then, you know, I'm repeating myself.
You can save it out as a DAISY or an MP3.
Sure.
And then as long as you put it on a CD that can play an MP3 file, or you put it into I put mine into a book port one day after placing in some bookmarks, and I was able to jump between chapters just fine. But that's the kind of stuff that I encourage all of you listeners to do. If you're using version 11 right now and you're saying to yourself, boy, this is really great, but I wish it would do such and so.
Sure.
You might want to write to steve@kurzweiledu.com and let him know.
The list is quite good as well. I know that as a user of a product, I am one of those people that likes to get on a mailing list and just interact with other users. And, you know, some lists have a culture that's maybe not as friendly as it should be, and then there are lists that just really are very vibrant, and this is one of those that's very friendly, and the moderators do a good job of keeping things on track.
And it's not really too...
engineers right there on the
absolutely.
List questions.
Yeah, and it's and it's not too busy, you know, unlike some other lists that you know, are available, you know, where you'll get, you know, 300-400 messages a day. We have a caller. Welcome to Main Menu Live. Caller, how can we help you tonight?
Hello, Jeff and Paul and Daryl. This is Max Swanson in Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi, Max.
And Paul, I can attest to Paul's fix for the ETI Eloquence problem.
Oh, that's great.
We went through that little scene a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why I called.
Okay.
Except to say that as far as peripheral uses of K1000, it makes a heck of a nice little word processor for one, two-page document.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
Somebody says, write a letter to so-and-so, it works real well.
Oh, good.
We actually had a guy a few years ago who bought the program to write his memoirs.
Oh, well.
He didn't buy it to scan. He just bought it to type his memoirs.
Wow. Okay.
The one thing that, or direction that I would be very curious about is, have you thought of an interface conf as opposed to scan conf when you ask the program to do things like download and translate a web braille or a Gutenberg file? For example, when the web braille had their time of troubles there, and we still don't know quite what happened, or when you had to use the Gutenfix or Gutfix, come out with that program. Some utility whereby if the changes are fairly minor, the user could alter the script that the program is using, the K1000 is using to activate the website, to interact, with the website.
Yeah, that would be good for an advanced user, perhaps.
Yeah.
And okay. That might be something. And Bob Alexander, by the way, is another good guy that you could write to at Kurzweil, bob@kurzweiledu.com. He does a lot of that web stuff, and he's the guy who, I think, fixed the web rail in the Gutenberg. Him and there's another lady by the name of Josephine who have a lot. These three people really have a lot to do with Kurzweil. And they're very receptive to people asking for help and making suggestions.
I'm sure it's not easy. I'll let you go here, but it would be nice to have some control so that if Web Braille sneezes, we don't all catch pneumonia.
There you go.
Very good. Okay.
And I say write to Steve or whatever and make that suggestion.
That's great.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Good night. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And we're going to take a little bit of a break, let these guys stretch their legs a little bit. We have an access review coming up here, which we really appreciate Jamie putting these together and making them available for us here on Main Menu Live. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and they're just real short, you know, snippets of a specific technology topic. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and listen to that, and then we'll be back with Daryl and Jamie and Paul. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, Main Menu listeners. This is Jamie Pauls with another AccessWatch software review. When I got my very first computer back in the early 90s, one of the things that I wanted to be able to do was to play computer games like my sighted counterparts. There were a few DOS games for the visually impaired available back then, but there weren't many. It was actually a sighted friend who introduced me to my very first text adventure game. Over the last several years, however, there have been many games developed for the visually impaired computer user. One of the latest of these is a game by Elworks entitled Judgment Day. The premise behind this game is quite simple. You're one of the good guys, and you are being attacked by evil forces that you must shoot out of the sky as quickly as possible. That's where the similarities to other games ends as far as this game is concerned, however. Judgment Day provides a lot of expandability and a lot of flexibility by allowing you to acquire trophies throughout gameplay. I'll give you a spoiler. I acquired a trophy simply by launching the game on Christmas Day. As you acquire trophies, you are able to unlock bonus rounds within the main game, acquire extra weaponry, and unlock bonus games as well. There are a few other goodies within the game that I won't tell you about now. The voiceover work is pretty good in the game, and the sounds are excellent. You can use your screen reader with the game if you choose. The cost of the game is $25, but if you want to relieve some stress at the end of a hard day, I recommend Judgment Day, and I'll give it a 5 rating. You can pick it up at www.l-works.net. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info, and have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
That's right, if you want to call in. In fact, we have a caller right now. Let's bring the caller right in here on Main Menu Live tonight. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hey Jeff, this is Keith Booher from West Virginia.
Hey, how's it going, Keith?
Good evening. I have a couple questions. I think I'll just ask them and hang up. And then.
Okay, that would be great, Keith. Thank you.
The first one real quick is how much is the competitive upgrade if you own OpenBook? And the second, I'd just like someone to explain the authorization, I guess you would call it. Like, for example, is it okay if you use Kurzweil K1000 on more than one computer, and how you authorize it, or if you can do that if you're not hooked up to the internet when you purchase it. That's it. Thanks, and I'm enjoying the program.
Thank you, Keith.
Okay.
All right, Paul, you want to go ahead and take those, bud?
You bet. There are. Let me talk about the first one, unless they've changed it on me, and I don't believe they have. The competitive upgrade, if you have any kind of a competing product, and I suppose you could even own a Reading Edge, and if you can prove that you own it, the upgrade is $595, so you save about $400 that way. Secondly, we don't really mind how many computers you run it on, or that you run Kurzweil on, as long as you're not giving it away to your buds down the street. I've seen people have it on a work computer, a home computer, a laptop, you know, all at the same time, maybe an upstairs computer, a downstairs computer. There are three ways to register Kurzweil. The main one, and I encourage people to do this if they possibly can, is to do it online. Because that way, if you're like me and your computer crashes on Friday night and you're up Saturday night at 3 in the morning, you can actually be registering Kurzweil online. Now, I have to say that once you register by telephone, which is the second thing I'm going to mention, you always have to register by telephone.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
If at all possible, do it online the first time. And that way, anytime you need to put it on another computer, you'll be able to do it online. Telephone is the second way. You call up the main Kurzweil number, and there's a button on that menu there for registering by telephone. You give them a code, which is based on your machine, probably your processor. They give you a code. You type it in the box, and you're good to go. The third way to register is to do it via floppy diskette. This is kind of neat if you have a demo program because, as you know, a demo program works for 30 days, and then it will time out. However, if you register via a floppy, you actually have 90 days in which to mail that floppy in and get it back from Kurzweil and put it into your floppy drive. So that's kind of a neat thing.
Hmm.
And those are the three ways to do it. I think if you register too many times, eventually it will come up and tell you that you can no longer register, you need to talk to customer service, and then you need to give them a good excuse.
Yeah, not a problem. That's just to make sure that, you know, it's not ending up on, you know, a website or some outrageous thing like that. Hmm. So.
We have a question coming in from Peter.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and read that? And we also have a phone call as well, Daryl.
Okay.
You want to take the
Peter
phone call?
Peter asks...
go ahead.
Question for Paul. Does Kurzweil 1000 retain tables in scanned documents? If so, can you move through the tables using some kind of row and column navigation commands like you would in a screen reader?
Yes to both questions. There are quite, in version 9, I believe, when we first came out with table reading mode, and it has only gotten more complicated with each version. Some of our users and some of our beta testers have asked for some really specific table movement keys. So yes, we do retain tables. F6, F7, and F8 will move you from the previous to current and next table item, but there are plenty of other alt and control keys which will help you to move around the table.
Excellent. That's great. All right, we have a caller, and let's go ahead and welcome the caller to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller. How can we help you tonight?
Hi, this is Rich Costa again. I just had another question with Kurzweil. I had seen on the list as far as talking about the burning of files to CDs that one thing I did see on there was something about getting the correct or having a problem with the lame encoder. For Vista, and I know in the past that when people had programs like EasyCD Creator, that kind of caused problems for the MP3 creations, and I was just wondering if there was, any development on that.
Well, sure,
that.
Let me comment on that,
okay,
because that's
on,
actually been around ever since version 6.
Hold on one second, Paul. Richard, we're going to go ahead and let you go. You can listen on the air, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
no
thanks.
Problem.
Uh-huh. Okay, Paul, go right ahead.
The Roxio people, for some reason, when you install Roxio, they disable Windows' ability to create MP3 files and substitute their own, which is probably a fine thing. But with Kurzweil, it caused us to not be able to create an MP3 file. So what we usually try to do is we try to send you a file called lame_enc.dll, and you put that in your Windows system or System 32 folder, and then that will allow you to continue to create MP3 files. And that has been around for quite a while. Now, you made mention of Vista. Vista has something with it as well with regard to creating MP3 files, but again, that can be gotten around by getting a hold of the lame encoder and dropping it in the Windows system folder. And there is supposed to be a 1101 patch, I think, which may address that probably in the near future.
Yeah. Do you know, Paul, if there's going to be a special version of the Lame Encoder for Vista, or is it just any Lame Encoder version?
So what I've heard right now is it's any Lame Encoder version. I have not heard of a special version.
Okay. Okay. All right. Daryl, do we have any other questions that have come in from MSN?
Oh, that's all for now.
Okay, great. All right, if you'd like to call into the show tonight, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And I want to allow Jamie here, since you're here joining us and participating in the show tonight, Jamie.
Sure.
Yeah, we want to give you an opportunity to mention Access Watch and give you a minute or two to talk all about Access Watch for those who may be listening who don't know what it is, and they should.
Well, thank you.
Great website. Want to go ahead and tell them about that?
You bet. About 2 years ago, I had some changes in my job situation, and I had a little spare time. And one of the things that I had been thinking about for a long time was, wouldn't it be nice if there was a place where you could go and read text-based reviews of software that you were contemplating purchasing, and you just really didn't know if it worked with speech or not. Now, there are a lot of ways that you can find out that information. You can join mailing lists. You can download podcasts. But sometimes those things can be a little tough to ferret out. And so I was wanting a way to really have a nice repository of information. I have a good friend named Tyson Treasure, who actually is a computer programmer and has cerebral palsy, and he happened to be looking for a job at the time, and he actually designed a database for me that allows users to go to Access Watch. And by the way, that's not the only thing on Access Watch. I have a lot of links to different topics, so if you're interested in CD burning or if you're interested in cell phones, there are different headings that you can navigate to, and I provide a lot of links and some information, tutorials, and that sort of thing. But really, the flagship program of Access Watch is this database. So if you go to Access Watch, you can sign up for a free account. You fill in some information, your name, computer type, screen reader, that sort of thing. Then when you go to write a review for a program, the database makes you fill out certain information. And of course, if you had this account created, then a lot of this information is already pre-filled in. And so you fill in the software title, version number, and then, of course, all of your computer info. Then you give it a rating from 1 being the worst to 5 being the best. And then you just have a nice little edit box where you can just type in some text. And people have been very creative. There are everything from little short 2-sentence reviews of a program to some little mini tutorials with keyboard guide information. So there's just a lot of material there. And what's interesting, and I'll just real quickly give you one example. I was reading in PC World about Trend Micro's PC security software. And I remember thinking, that sounds like a cool suite. I wonder if it works with speech. I went to Access Watch, and lo and behold, found 4 or 5 reviews from different users using different screen readers who all said, yeah, it works, and here are some tips to make it work better.
That's great.
So it's just a really easy, quick way of finding out what works and what doesn't.
That's great. We'll give everybody the website in just a minute, but we actually have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
I believe that would be me, wouldn't it?
It would be you, indeed.
Yes, my name is Tommy. I have a suggestion. I have no clue what 2GMT time or whatever that is. I was wondering if you could maybe convey the time, and maybe I understand you're broadcasting all over the world, in fact. Just West Coast, East Coast time, because I have no clue. I'm actually calling now because I'm guessing. And how about an email address to send you questions via email rather than going through this MSN thing?
Okay, sure, absolutely.
I think you'll get a lot more questions and information that way.
Absolutely.
That's all. I just wanted to convey that.
Okay.
I hope I didn't bring your show to a halt, but to convey it.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you. You can email us any questions, and honestly, we are doing so much here on the board that it's going to be kind of difficult for us to get to the email during the show. However, you can email your questions to mainmenu@acbradio.org, mainmenu@acbradio.org, and we'll either email you back a response or we'll actually answer the questions next week on the Main Menu Live show. So
yes, I'd also like to, Marlena asked a question, which I answered, but I'd like to give Paul a chance to expound upon this if he would like.
Sure.
Okay, so Marlena asks, if you purchase a K1000 upgrade to version 11, but you want to install it on a computer that does not have version 10 or any previous version, can you go ahead and do that installation? And I said, definitely yes. In fact, it is recommended to remove the previous version.
That's correct. We've got people kind of in both camps. You know, me and Nick like to have nice, clean versions when we put on a new version. But there are some other people that, you know, that may not be as fluent with uninstalling and kind of cleaning things up, so we'll just put them over the top of 10. Every time you get a version of Kurzweil, it's called an upgrade. On that CD is an absolutely full version of the program, so it does not require any previous version of the program to be installed.
Excellent. Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that brings up a good question, and I know that on the tape it was mentioning that Windows 95 and 98 are not really supported for a number of reasons anymore in version 11. Is that right, Paul?
That is correct, yeah.
Right. So if a user is still on Windows 95 or 98, are you guys selling older versions that will support that operating system or not?
And, you know, it's so inexpensive to upgrade, and I do want to mention that, by the way, because a lot of people were used to that $95 upgrade. So I do want to make mention that to upgrade to version 11 is $125 plus shipping.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because the people that we get programs from, like ScanSoft and like Abby, who do the Fine Engine, raise their royalties. So we ended up having to kind of raise the rate to you guys.
Sure.
But, you know, I had a guy that called me a few months ago, and he had version 2. And he asked me what it would cost to go to version 9. I told him it would be $95 plus shipping, and there was dead silence on the other end.
Yeah, he probably fell out of his chair, huh?
Yeah, I don't think. But we don't care if you're at version 1 right now and you want to go to version 11, it's going to be $125 plus the $10 I think they charge for shipping.
Yeah, the nice thing about that is that, you know, if there's a feature in version, let's say 12, that you're not going to use and you want to wait till version 13, you know, you're not going to have to pay twice.
Absolutely.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we don't have SMAs. You just skip whatever versions you want. You know, there's no contract or SMAs, anything like that. You don't want to buy the version, don't buy it.
That's great.
I'd also, speaking of upgrading, we should clarify this, does K1000 or will it soon run on Vista? And more importantly, maybe we should talk about the fact that there's still a lot of scanners out there that don't run on Vista yet.
K1000, I can tell you right now, is because I just did it last night, it's running on Vista, version 11.
Running on your special Vista machine.
You should know that this is not a special machine. It's running Vista Home Premium with WindowEyes. You should know that any versions prior to version 11 will not run on Vista. So if you've got version 8 or version 9 and you're thinking of going to Vista, you need to upgrade to Kurzweil 11 to be able to take advantage of that.
But watch out for your scanner drivers, right?
Yeah, exactly, because my wife and I upgraded to Vista, and we got on the Epson's website. We found out that my 3170 and her 1650 are no longer supported.
Ouch.
Luckily, our printers were supported. Oof. But all of a sudden, we have two perfectly good scanners and nothing to do with them.
The Plustek OpticBook 3600 is not supported yet either.
Oof.
Interesting.
Not good. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller.
Hello. I've got a quick question. I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Okay.
I have been a Macintosh user for about 18 months. Is there any ghost of a chance that Kurzweil might make a solution for the Mac? Thank you so very much.
Sure. I think
as we mentioned earlier, if you're running one of these new Intel-based Macs, you ought to give it a try because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Now, maybe
3,000 runs, so I see no reason why 1,000 would not.
Right. Now, maybe what he's asking, though, is are you planning on developing a version of K1000 for the Mac operating system?
No. And okay. A few people have asked that, but I don't think the market is big enough and that they want to invest the resources to develop it.
Okay. Hey, we have just a few minutes left, Paul, and one of the things, only because it's, you know, it's a pretty timely thing that we had on last week in reference to Vista, you and I were talking about this over the weekend. You took the plunge and dived head in to Vista.
I did.
And wanted to find out what your experience has been like.
It's been it's really been surprisingly great. It's a few new things. You know, you can't do Windows key UU to shut down your computer anymore. You kind of have to go look for the button. It's been really neat, and there's all kinds of neat things in the control panel that you can explore and play with. It's been quite accessible. Every program that I have installed, I've managed to work around and get running. I had some things early on that I wasn't sure of. I contacted the vendors, and they helped me out. The only thing so far that I have not gotten to work is using Microsoft Mike and Mary, trying to install them from the WindowEyes disk and getting them to work under Vista. But everything else works.
Wow.
And without any difficulty. I've got 32 icons on my desktop now, and they all work.
32? Wow. Okay.
With XP, I used to have 55, I think, or 54. So.
Oof, man. I like to keep my desktop kind of clean, but wow. that's quite a number there. So how are you liking Vista? I mean, is it does it seem more responsive to you? Or it's hard to say because you just got a brand new machine, too.
Yeah, that's true, because I now have I got a dual core. My motherboard kind of blew up last Tuesday, and so now I've got a dual core processor. You know, it seems about, I've noticed that Kurzweil seems to load a little bit faster, and I think web pages, some of the web pages seem to load a little bit faster for me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, and I'm using Outlook and that sort of stuff. That seems to be about the same to me.
Yeah,
but all in all, not a bad experience at all. I would not have done it for probably the next 6 months until things shook out a little bit. And I'm just using the sound card and the graphics card on the motherboard. So I'm sure that if I were to replace both of those, my system speed would probably increase markedly.
That's great. Daryl, we have a question, I guess, from Lisa.
Yes, Lisa is asking, she currently has OpenBook, and she may make the switch, I guess. But she said her Lexmark all-in-one scanner is not on the list of supported scanners. So maybe you might want to talk about when something is not on the list of supported scanners, does that mean it definitely does not work?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And Lexmark is usually pretty good for us, so I would encourage her to try it and to try the two things that we suggested, that is going into ScanConf and setting, making sure you're on the Lexmark Twain driver and setting hold scan to never and native scan to on. Lexmarks have always worked for us pretty well. We don't have every new model because, of course, they don't provide them to us for free. So we kind of try to do our best to test new scanners. Lexmarks are usually pretty good. And, of course, Dells are Lexmarks with Dell names on them. So, again, they are usually pretty good for us as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Interesting. Is there a tool or anything that one can download from your site that will check your scanner to see if it's compatible?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I don't believe we have anything like that.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you did or not. I didn't.
You have the excellent compatibility list, though.
Well, it has every scanner known to man that doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But I mean, it's...
That's for sure.
You know, it might be worthwhile to just mention what the demo options are for K1000.
Absolutely.
Oh, you bet. The demo, and you can request a demo by calling up, Kurzweil Sales. And also, by the way, I don't know if the 11 one was there, but if you go to ftp.kurzweiledu.com, and you go kind of down through the pub directory and get into Kurzweil 1000, you used to be able to go to version 10, and if you had a high-speed internet connection, you could download an over 500 meg demo of Kurzweil 10. I don't know if they've got 11 up there yet, but you might want to check. The demos will run for 30 days, 2 hours a day, and they are fully functional. So that'll
I can attest to it. It's more than adequate for you to get a good feel for the program.
Well, I get a lot of people who will put it on there, and then maybe they go away for 2 weeks. And I don't know why they do this, but don't put it on there unless you're ready to play.
Right.
Because I get more people that will call me up, and they're down to their last 2 days, and they put it on a month ago but never bothered to try it out. Now, that being said, if you call up sales and you sound convincing enough, there is a little extension file that sometimes they will give you that will extend your demo for another 30 days. Let's say you're playing with it, and you're pretty much convincing, yes, I'm purchasing it, everything, I'm just trying to get it through my... the things going through my state agency, well, they can sometimes give you an extension file, which will give you another 30 days.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time, guys, and we just have enough time to let everybody know what's coming up next week, both on an unfortunately caller. I'm not going to be able to take your call, caller. I'm sorry. If you want to hold on the phone, though, we'll take your call off the air, and we'll speak to the gang for you here on the phone, okay? Because we don't have time. We're just about out of time. Next week on Main Menu, we're going to be hearing from Stephen Bauer. He's going to talk to us all about HD radio. And then, Daryl, you're going to be doing that review of your talking timer, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. And then on Main Menu Live, we're going to be bringing on a representative from Appleon, the makers of Replay Radio and Replay AV. So that's definitely one you don't want to miss. It's kind of like TiVo for audio, you know. So it's that's going to be
that's true.
That's going to be a lot of fun. So, all right, guys, we got to call it a night, but we'll be back next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.